distinction of fellows, Hellenic Observatory. He's an associate professor for social policy at the University of the Peloponnese in Greece. And he's also, I think, chairman of the
Hellenic Social Policy Association.
Thank you very much. in Greece. He's obviously written a number of articles and books on issues of social policy, social rights in Greece, but also more broadly in Europe. And he's also currently working on issues of social policy in Greece in relation to the crisis, but also issues of wider issues of social justice related to that. And I think this is the topic of the presentation today. I won't say any more things in terms of introduction. I'll let Dimitris kick off his presentation.
Good evening and thanks for coming. Greece experiences a violent, blind, non-discerning social reform today, which minimizes social protection and maximizes social inequality in a residual system, promoting the interests of the more privileged. Δεν βλέπω καλά.
Έχουμε άλλο φως, δεν έχουμε more lights,
perhaps. Can we have more lights?
Excuse me. Δεν βλέπω. Του που έρχεται μόνο.
Πολύ ωραία. Perhaps if the level is adjusted.
Thanks a lot. That's better, yes. Sorry for that. The idea of this work is that a new equalizing basic social policy should focus in changing social culture, both individual patterns and social behavior. The means should be enhancing the concept of social justice in two dimensions. By pursuing specific tangible aims, legitimacy and efficacy, and by redistributing also intangible resources, power, recognition, opportunity. The argument is that social policy is not only about money, but also about values. There is, in fact, the long embedded social deficit. In short, a non-material, low-cost social policy embracing solidarity patterns and granting citizenship's right to make the country anyway richer, irrespective of the outcome of the financial crisis or of the political deadlock. The task in this paper lies not in finding the holy grail of the ultimate definition of social justice or of the full interpretation of the failure of a national social policy system. Its purpose is more down to earth. To elaborate on the stark imbalances between social policy and social injustice in Greece, and particularly to focus on the consequences of this controversial relationship to the violent, devastating retrenchment of social policy during a hard period of the country. This means investigating the principle of social justice in relation to the role of social policy, the interchange in the Greek social policy system, and the prospects of both justice and policy. In principle, social policy is expected to make societies more just and less unequal. Social policy should ensure that the existing distribution of wealth moves towards a more egalitarian socioeconomic order. Social policy should embody an ethos of collectivism and a commitment to social justice, which should balance individualism, liberalism, and egalitarianism. This means that the relationship between social policy and social justice is fundamental to discover the appropriate means of providing an acceptable mix among liberty, equality, and justice. Societies work within a common framework of values and constraints. Social policies are seeking to provide and modify welfare according to social justice and individual need. In practice, social policy in Greece has failed to ameliorate social inequality because it never aimed at real justice or at challenging the profound inequalities delivered by an underdeveloped capitalism. A divided society has been reflected in a fragmented social security system. Average Greek social policy is not designed, but decided according to controversial criteria to retain the unequal allocation of resources and to provide more welfare to those less in need. In short, the first part of this work discusses the key dimensions of social justice, focusing on its interrelation with social policy. The second part identifies the deficits of social justice in the Greek social policy system, emphasizing that this elusive but essential concept that does not represent a political ideal or a social vision in Greece. This unfair deficit produces deep-rooted implications today, reinforcing the deadlock of both a political system and a social culture which never espouse a real commitment to social justice. The interlock of social policy with social justice becomes a deadlock in the Greek paradigm. According to ILO, social justice is based on equality of rights for all human beings and their possibility to benefit from economic and social progress without discrimination. But where lies the balance between equality and inequality, between liberty and constraint? The sensible answer is that it should lie at a fair point. How are we to decide what is fair? This question is appropriate to all policy areas, but is principally in particular in the area of social policy. However, the meaning of justice is disputable and the meaning of social justice is controversial. Justice is mainly conceptualized as utility, as entitlement, and as contracts. For policy making, abstract conceptualization is much less useful than applicable notions of social justice. In any way, the conceptual model of justice adopted has clear implications in delivering public services. It is widely thought that social justice is a notoriously difficult concept to define. This might be true for those interested in the philosophical or perhaps the ethical dimensions of justice. This is less true for those inspired by its aim just by instinct or those convinced that its role for well-being, irrespective of any ideology other than humanism, is a vital one. This kind of people tend to believe that social justice is simply a desirable situation which balances inequality and welfare and is enforced by redistributive policies embracing egalitarian implications. This, more or less, presupposes a relationship of trust between citizens and the state reallocating wealth and market outcomes. Hayek disputed the validity of the very idea of social justice. He argued for a strong state that promotes not justice but the market and rules out redistribution of wealth. Nozick opposed to a strong state and proposed a free market system to allocate wealth and, after all, to define social order irrespective of any notion of social justice. Contrary to Kant and Hegel, both Hayek and Nozick deny that liberty and equality might be mutually reinforcing. Durkheim argued for a society reconciling individualistic and collective values and reducing inequalities. Green regarded the state as a safeguard of common good and freedom, and that the welfare state enforces a combination of individual liberty with social interests. John Rawls, a leading political philosopher in the tradition of Locke, Rousseau, and Kant, theorized the concept of justice, which was connected with problems about the grounds of basic liberties, the limits of political obligation, and the justice of inequalities. Rawls' theory incorporates a strong element of social justice by redistribution of income, wealth, and power. Social and economic inequalities are to be arranged so that they are to the advantage of the worst off. contrary to Nozick's neglect and Hayek's anathema, the starting point of this work is that the welfare state is more or less a fair system designed both to distribute welfare provision for all and to redistribute wealth in favor of the least advantaged. At the end of the day, one straightforward definition of what social justice is about is that provided by Miller, a political theorist. It's how the good and bad things in life should be distributed among the members of a human society. This focuses on the redistribution paradigm of social justice, which is increasingly complemented with a recognition paradigm. In addition, the dimension of representation is also considered as contributing to justice. The government may adopt policies aiming either to intervene in society or to avoid interference and to diminish regulation. Social policy is mostly regarded as a system designed to promote social justice and to implement social redistribution according to need and wealth. Any particular distribution of resources may be defended on the basis of a discourse of rights, the concept of which has been widened by social justice so that to encompass social rights. The positive redistribution from the better off to the worse off implies greater equality in the distribution of resources and the provision of rights. The concept of equality plays a major role as a principle against which social policies are just. Different meanings of equality reflect equally different understandings of social policy. Both left and right normally accept the principle of equality before the law as fundamental to a free society. The thick version of equality has been variously called social equality, equality of status, or equality of regard. It reflects the recognition of the fundamental equality of each individual in social relationship and the opposition to social privilege or inequality. Thus, directs welfare towards issues of justice and morality. For him, social welfare requires the elimination of unjust inequalities rather than inequalities per se. His second inequality principle focuses on the precedence of equality of opportunity. Rawls' theory provides an important justification for redistributive social policies. Redistributive taxation and egalitarian welfare services must, with limited market regulation, are prerequisites for an efficient and just allocation of goods. In this respect, he might be considered as a supporter of state welfare capitalism. During the 80s, some thought-provoking debates about social equality contributed also in a debate reviewing the notion of social justice. The new ideas embrace considerations for complex equality, differential equality, and equality of obligation. The theory of complex equality argues for a multidimensional system of distributive justice, where much of social policy provisions should be organized on a civil society system. The differential equality analysis binds the traditional welfare provision with a democratization of welfare services geared towards differentiated needs and developed processes that reconcile the concepts of equality and difference and envisages a principle of differential justice. During the 90s, a controversial form of social justice geared towards wealth creation and economic efficiency versus the distribution of wealth, namely equality of obligation, was initiated by the New Democrats in the US. In the UK, this has epitomized the center-left's drift away from welfare egalitarianism by the New Labour. Equality is neutralized by terms such as fairness. Deregulated markets are not an anathema. Flexibility replaces security in the area of employment. Egalitarian aims are substituted by a focus on social inclusion. The emphasis is on equality of obligations and not on equality of rights. Differences in class social background or income are no legitimate reasons to skip social responsibilities. The aim of equality of opportunity is still high in the agenda, but in a different third way, describing a kind of statutory justice. It is the poor who have to change their values and habits rather than the mainstream society reconsidering its values and habits in order to accommodate itself to the needs of the poorest. But greater equality remains the prerequisite for equality of opportunity. The inherent and everlasting privileges undermine, at the end of the day, a genuine equality of opportunity. It is only when the debate moves beyond the fundamental and unresolved problem, issue of poverty, that the emphasis goes to a meritocratic conceptualization of social justice. Sadly, it is the meritocratic ideal expressed in terms of opportunity and social mobility that currently drives the so-called non-neoliberalist policies. For the UK example, New Labour has more or less abandoned the goal of greater equality in favour of the discourse of opportunity. Certainly, it is fair and acceptable that people deserve to be given equal means to develop their differing capacities in a satisfying way. This requires a restructuring which attempts to match social roles to individual capacities. This may include the reduction of the liberty of some, and also freedom, for instance, in terms of taxation and contribution in collective schemes. Inequalities must be attached only to offices to which all may aspire under conditions of fair equality of opportunity, the so-called fair inequalities. But is the impact of social policy on equalizing wealth, income, and power affecting, in fact, social justice? The welfare state has failed to deliver on major aspects of equality, of public expenditure, of final income, of use, of cost, of outcome. Welfare services are weakly egalitarian. Only one quarter of social provision produce a kind of vertical redistribution. One possible explanation is that the welfare state embodies a vital contradiction. It was intended by many to integrate an ethos of equality without challenging in depth the inequalities of the capitalist societies. If the welfare state were to equalize resources too much, it could lose the support of the middle classes, those from whom these resources are taken. On top, by doing modest redistribution, the welfare state has been able to retain the support and to survive the radical right onslaught of the 80s and 90s. Consequently, social policy is mainly concerned with fair equality of opportunity, and its impact on social justice is disputable. Come along. Hi, how are you doing? The prevailing concept of justice has immense implications to the social policy model adopted by any government. Though both liberals, Rawls and Nozick, disagreed about which social philosophy is the correct to follow, neither Rawls nor Nozick offer a tenable definition of justice. Both fail to consider the fundamental human need for well-being. However, both contribute to a wider understanding of justice, and in adapting a conceptual model of justice which may enforce considerable implications for the implementation of social policy. Nozick's account of justice raises a number of moral questions, but fails to understand that society needs more than justice in order to survive. It also needs compassion. Rawls, in contrast, specifies that all may enjoy conditions of fair equality of opportunity regulated by the state. In short, Nozick's minimalist state has no track for interventions to redistribute wealth. The welfare state is regarded as an unfair system, Welfare is a commodity. Rawls' legitimate state provides welfare rights as a necessary guarantee of basic liberty and equality of opportunity. Welfare rights serve to fulfill certain critical needs which stand prior to and are a condition of basic liberty and opportunity. Social justice is a powerful but elusive term for social policy analysis and is concerned with the extent to which social arrangements may be regarded as fair. It is concerned with who ought to get what and under what terms, and implies a distributional element. Social policies produce both vertical and horizontal redistribution. The extent to which such redistribution is justified and which form should be given priority depends on the way of understanding the principle of equality and particularly the potential belief that certain specific scarce commodities, such as healthcare or education, should be distributed less unequally than the ability to pay for them. Social justice legitimizes a principle of redistributive justice. A fair redistribution of income and wealth between groups and individuals, aiming to close the big gap between those at the top and those at the bottom. The principle of distributional equality leads to a range of social policies that are concerned with the allocation of economic resources and social provisions, and that are connected with equality of opportunity and outcome. Such policies modify initial distribution, usually generated by the market, taxes and transfers, and generate redistribution through the provision of universal welfare benefits and rights. A general redistribution of income and equality of access are normally acceptable as just strategies of social policy. What differs is the explanation for equalization in respect of specific social policies and the way of considering the justification of such intervention. In sum, the argumentation derives from three sources. The argument for common needs. In a society where basic needs are to be satisfied, this is best done by supplying certain universal provisions. The argument for common citizenship. In a society providing access to universal services, there is a connection between social policy provision and a sense of common citizenship. The argument for democracy, where the pattern of services provided depends on the preferences of the electorate for specific aspects of individual well-being. At the end of the day, the distribution of income and wealth is the dimension most commonly referred in the social justice discourse. However, the elements of distribution and the identification of justice may be differing in different societies. For example, the wider emphasis might be in traditional issues such as poverty and social exclusion, as any kind of discrimination, as citizenship rights. It might also be in postmodern issues, such as the growing recognition that social justice needs to embrace environmental justice. Social inequalities are amongst the major sources of environmental harm. The particular focus might be less convergent. Lower or unequal pay, maldistribution of personal time, family caring, work opportunities. In every respect, a socially just distribution is primarily concerned with the provision of adequate material resources to live with dignity, to overcome disadvantage, and to flourish. However, unequal societies may successfully manage their social problems, but they do not solve them. It is widely argued that understanding social policy today presupposes a combined approach of class analysis with social movement theory. By the beginning of the 21st century, the party and the union are widely considered as bureaucratic, hierarchical, and old-fashioned institutions. Moreover, these forms of representation hardly promote social justice through procedures of equal opportunity, pluralism, or radical change. There is a widespread sociological argument that contemporary society consists of social movements rather than classes, and or that a class is one form of a social movement. Social movement theories embrace in social analysis a focus on the specificities of formal or informal interrelated groups and associations who share similar values, concerns, identities, and objectives. But it is the positive consequences of welfare capitalism, rising prosperity, educational opportunities, health services, that enabled the new social movement to emerge, movements to emerge, and its failure gave them something to fight against. If the concept of social movements should be accepted, social policy has to develop a new, more sophisticated and complex analytical paradigm. The welfare state has to reconcile class and social movement theories and to reconsider the current complex nature of social inequality. Social movements influence welfare systems by offering new perspectives and by embracing new areas of social interaction that enrich and update citizenship rights and entitlements. Social movements may enforce egalitarian policies that embrace new forms of social provision related to gender, ethnicity, disability, age, and sexuality. Therefore, social policy today must be increasingly concerned with the form of social redistribution of non-economic resources such as power, access, or opportunities towards non-economic rights such as dignity, diversity, plurality, or autonomy. This might also include reallocation of cultural standing from dominant to non-dominant status groups. This reminds us also the essence of collective rights and the concept of differential equality, which reformulates the principle of equality at a deeper level applicable to the postmodern societies. In terms of citizenship rights, this contrasts citizenship of diversity with that of sameness or equality. However, differential citizenship appears to abandon universalism in favor of the local and the particular, which seems with what citizenship is about in the first place. But in practice, what of the prospects of promoting justice through social policy during a worldwide huge recession? Social policies should continue to provide for material basic needs through the redistributive instruments on the basis of the traditional class analysis. They should also consider non-material needs and develop new forms of provision with an emphasis to intangible citizenship rights matched with forms of market regulation. This means that the public policy making process should reconsider two dimensions. On the one hand, issues such as pluralism, cultural diversity and change within a civil society by enhancing relative forms of intangible resources and processes. On the other hand, current realities such as boosting poverty, unemployment and inequality by redistributing vertical resources and very scarce resources at the moment. In brief, there might be a post-crisis social policy pattern combining traditional class theory, contemporary social movement analysis, and declining socioeconomic capacity. This produces two options. One, that incorporates social movements and welfare provision in a form that perpetuates current injustices. Another, that reconciles social movements with socioeconomic developments and enforces a radical social policy reform aiming at higher levels of multidimensional differential social justice, at new priorities and enriched directions of social spending. This inclusive form of distributive justice reformulates the principle of justice at an even deeper and more qualitative level, which equally requires new forms of egalitarian politics. Social policies that develop appropriate social, public, economic, and political practices and that promote respective patterns. Practices sensitive and policies inclusive to all kinds of differences between individuals, social groups, and minorities. The social implications can be wide-ranging, implying the provision of basic needs, the empowerment of social participation, and the strengthening of citizenship rights. This might be a conceptual basis that should inspire welfare reform towards a more just society and a more active civil society, enhancing democratic rights and communal duties. In this direction, the concept of a communitarian welfare state pattern should be enforced based on a citizenship which favors communal obligations which are considered equally fundamental as rights. The role of social policy in contemporary Greece is contested and its impact on social development controversial. A long tradition of unbalanced policies and absurd decisions distort the idea of social justice and fail in decent welfare provision. It is an underdeveloped social policy context characterized by low need satisfaction and high poverty rates. The social policy system reflects a legacy of weak political and solidarity patterns and an absence of social and financial planning. The main characteristics of the system could be summarized as follows. A delayed and restricted evolution of universal welfare policies. A predominance of contributory social transfers, mainly pensions. An unrestricted growth of unjustified social insurance privileges. A maldevelopment of poor health, social assistance, and social care services, distributional imbalance, and administrative inefficiency. Inexistent family policy in a social system where family has always been the major welfare provider. It is a social security mosaic granting high benefits to favored groups of public servants, generous contributory benefits to private market employees according to dubious policy arrangements than to contribution records, and finally, meager social assistance benefits to the uninsured or those in great need. Inequality is the predominant feature in all aspects of provision, namely the level, the range, the criteria, and the financing of benefits. Inefficiency is the next one. Efficient administrative capacity and low impact of even high budget social policies. In sum, this is a system urging for decades for radical reform, and if this is acceptable, the promotion of social justice is indispensable. This should primarily include the enforcement of equalizing the distributing social policies and the rationalization, modernization of social administration. The politico-economic crisis in Greece brought in 2010 the activation of an international emergency plan monitored by the European Union and the International Monetary Fund, enforcing huge austerity and deregulatory reforms. Part of the national deadlock is associated with the failure of the welfare system to accomplish its mission in every respect, social, economic, and political. An underdeveloped residual system reproducing unacceptable levels of injustice and inefficiency, barely influenced by the vision or the capacity of the European social model. In this context, the austerity 2010-11 supranational aid plan produced severe income reduction combined with considerable tax increase and mounting unemployment. This plan is enforced basically by horizontal, non-discerning cuts, reproducing alarming social inequalities and producing serious deficits of political legitimacy. This plan exposes not only the institutional, political, and economic weaknesses of Greece, but also the limits of European Union coordination and the limitation of the Eurozone countries' solidarity. In social policy, the role of the international intervention in deteriorating social rights and welfare provision is astonishing. The most significant impact is on cash benefits, mainly in pension in terms of level, retirement, and replacement rates. Even minimum and minimal pensions were severely cut. In health, where the deficits are one main reason for national bankruptcy, a cost containment policy is after all underway, including the rationalization of pharmaceutical expenses, hospital mergers, the reorganization of primary care. In social assistance, an overall reduction of benefits and the introduction of drastic means testing diminished provision. In industrial relations, an overall deregulation by the abolishment of minimum earnings, the enforcement of dismissals, even in the public sector, the overall deterioration of employment standards. This is a forced anti-social reform with huge socio-economic implications. It enhances poverty, it mounts insecurity, it encourages commodification and privatization, it extends inequality and injustice. It curtails the poor social services, it abandons hardly won social rights. The overall argument is for improving economic efficiency and increasing productivity, and the mean is diminishing social expenditure and welfare institutions towards an overall internal devaluation. The main victims are, of course, the most vulnerable groups, those weaker in society, those low paid or excluded from the market. Social policy is crudely shaped according to market imperatives and to the international loans conditions, not according to needs and to mounting social problems. In every respect, the national turmoil and the international confusion provokes poverty and promotes injustice. This is the outcome of the urgent social policy enforced during a period of economic and political bankruptcy, as well as of backlash social relations and rights. This is the new social policy pattern, a kind of creeping austerity economic policy. In terms of social justice framework, the structural adjustment enforced more or less directly by the European Union and the IMF diminishes incomes and job opportunities, increases uncertainty, dismantles labor rights, intensifies the need for decent employment and social protection. Considerable numbers of traditional middle-class strata, self-employed, small entrepreneurs, public sector employees, will sink into the ranks of the new poor. For some, a gloomy scenario of recomposition in earnings distribution within the middle classes that could enforce a stronger division between the upper and the lower strata is most probable. For others, the consequences of the crisis distributional effects are noted. But the agony over the welfare future is that there is a certainty of further wage and pension reductions and of loss of socioeconomic rights. In every respect, people in Greece experience an overall devaluation, a dramatic fall in living standards, in welfare, and in available income. Understanding social policy in Greece can be based neither in class analysis nor in social movement theories. Representative institutions such as political parties or trade unions remain conservative and bureaucratic, promoting specific vested interests. allocating benefits and granting offices irrespective of justice or meritocracy. Civil society remains fragmented and weak. The extent to which social arrangements are regarded as fair is minimal. A large number of formal or informal interrelated groups, mainly party political and occupational associations, share different and differing values, concerns, identities and objectives. Welfare capitalism was not influenced with broader social movements or communal values, but was in fact connected with specific organized interests irrespective of need. Domination of old-fashioned and diverging peculiarities is the main reason of the underdevelopment of social policy in Greece. Social policy adapts individualism mainly by granting unevenly contributory, unjustified and unjustifiable benefits. This is a residual welfare state favoring clientelism and dependence. Social policy decisions disregard the extent and the nature of social inequality. The prevailing values and demands, hardly influenced the welfare system by offering a social vision or by fighting for real social protection and citizenship rights. Social policy largely is a primitive administration of the allocation of cash benefits in favor of the better off. The distribution of vital, underneath, or enlightened resources, such as power, access, or opportunities, is far from equal. The cultural standing is defined by the dominant status groups. The rights of minorities are more than disputable. There is a complete absence of organizational structures of participation towards empowerment. A contested kind of differential anti-citizenship is based on social status and on political rather than on equalizing criteria, preserving social exclusion and unfair distribution of wealth. Today, there is an urgent need for a real distributive social justice pattern. A new emergency social policy, due to the limited resources and the large problems, requires a new multidimensional protection scheme. First, by covering basic material needs in terms of minimum income, health, and educational services. Second, by equalizing redistributing non-material resources in terms of power, access, merit, and opportunities. Third, by safeguarding citizenship rights and communal duties at the same time. A new redistributive policy against poverty, unemployment, and inequality, poor in economic, but sufficient in sociopolitical resources and enhanced legitimacy. A radical policy aiming at an inclusive, differential social justice, cultivating the relationship between the individual and the community, and promoting the concept of active citizenship. A strategy ameliorating some harsh options of the crudely liberal Greek state and providing common links to the divided Greek society. A reinvigorated state justifying its role in promoting the common good through public institutions for health or education, and a society building at last a coherent minimum basis favoring both communal duties and individual rights. In short, a strategic reform plan towards communitarian ideas and solidarity includes a two-gear change. First, and immediately, a redistributive social policy covering basic needs. Second and longer term, reshaping of patterns to reformulate the prevailing concept of social justice to enhance collective spirit and action to change social behavior. Social justice advances equality, embraces liberty, and enhances freedom. Promoting social justice is about more than increasing income and creating jobs. It is also about rights, dignity, and voice for all human beings, as well as an economic, social, and political empowerment. In Greece, the costs of the overwhelming forms of social injustices are mostly borne by those who lack access, opportunity, voice, and power. The wider social costs, however, are also at the expense of economic development. In this respect, a strategy for social justice should involve the society as a whole and would also have major impact in economic progress. But the concept of social justice adapted should be relevant to the Greek reality, should not break the social mirror. This primarily means embracing legitimacy in three key dimensions. In the social one, by implementing fair and decent social policy adjustment. In the economic one, by enforcing rational and effective funding and administrative adjustments. In the political one, by introducing an empowering institutional framework and inclusive procedures promoting citizenship. This, of course, is not to underestimate that to achieve higher levels of social justice, the Greek state needs to enforce and maintain the conditions for decent employment and adequate social protection, conditions which are becoming scarce in the current turmoil. As long as a deeper economic and political union in Europe, embracing the reinvigoration of the European social model, remains doubtful, there is not space for optimism about radical welfare reform in slowly moving countries such as Greece. Briefly put, we urgently need to find also national alternatives to focus a social reform to enhance equality and to hold a viable social cohesion. Traditional social policy alone cannot, in fact, eliminate inequality in Greece today. A re-regulated order, including both the market and the state, reallocating opportunities and alleviating injustices is required to improve the quality of social relations. A new, sophisticated social policy mix should combine, first, the distribution of non-economic resources such as universal basic services in health and education. Second, the redistribution of non-economic resources such as equal opportunities, recognition, and power. Third, a universal income maintenance scheme guaranteeing a minimum income within the capacity of the Greek economy. Crucial prerequisites towards this scenario are both the establishment of a fair taxation system and the reorganization, rationalization of social administration. A new system should aim at accommodating a balance between meritocracy, equality, and individualism, liberty, promoting a more communitarian social culture. A form of a Rawlsian system of fair inequalities, defining a situation where the opportunities available to individuals to benefit from privileges are fair, and surplus inequalities are so adjusted that greatest benefit is accumulated to those least advantaged. This requires a distributive mechanism for equalizing opportunities, influencing both social processes and outcomes. Of course, some might argue that this is a too good to become true scenario. Perhaps it is, but if such a structural change cannot be somehow, someday achieved, the social, institutional, economic, and political underdevelopment in Greece will sooner or later exclude this country from the European environment. Moreover, the next, after the current, worst crisis is forthcoming. Postmodern social policy is to be co-organized by the state and civil society and is to be inspired by distributive justice and the fundamental component of equality. The proposed social policy option is a radical but rather down-to-earth version where social policies are social change and vertical redistribution. In any case, social policy has to develop a more sophisticated and complex analytical paradigm, reconciling class and social movement theories and reconsidering the current complexities of social and global inequality. Postmodern social policies should incorporate social participation with welfare provision and cultivate a social culture inspired by commitment for less inequality and more justice. At last, it is important to remember that the theorization and politics of social justice are about the kind of society in which we want to live. In Greece, for instance, whether we are talking about crisis, redistribution, respect, or recognition, are we carefully considering the outcome of policies and practices of the past on individual lives and on the quality of social relations today? Are we also reconsidering the policies and practices of tomorrow? Thank you very much.
Almost keeping the time. I think a very interesting presentation and quite provocative, I think, at some points. I have a broad question, which I'll perhaps sort of use it as a means to open up the discussion. I have the sense that there's somehow, you know, too much being asked from Greece, in the sense that these are not, you know, these sort of comprehensive notions of social justice are not to be encountered also in other European states. So this would be an exception if it was sort of successfully delivered in that sense, especially in a time of crisis. And I don't know to what extent one can think of, you know, if the social welfare model of Greece is a failed one or has been a failed one before the crisis, then, you know, how does this kind of vision of a different understanding, a different notion of social justice, a more complete, comprehensive one, combine with calls of you know, sort of trying to maintain the elements of welfare state rather in the system? You know, shouldn't one be pro-reform and saying, well, you know, let's abolish everything, the system doesn't work, we have to reinvent the notion of social justice, and in that sense also, you know, design from scratch all policies, including taxation, provision, and everything that goes with it. Mm. So if you want perhaps to respond to that.
I hope that it was clear from my presentation, from this work, that the main crisis in Greece is in social terms. Neither in economic nor in political. The political crisis is the reflection of the social crisis. I understand that it is too much it is too much to ask after so much to wait. And I have not a feeling, nor an intuition, but whatever, I have a hope that during such a deep crisis, a traditionally divided and individualistic society will, at the end of the day, at last react in a way which identifies the benefits of solidarity, enhances the idea that we are not entitled only to rights but also to duties, and that in terms of social policy, which it is a more specific and more interesting question to answer because I'm not a sociologist, thanks God, is that in my view it is there is a simple solution which requires first to to implement an overall scheme which is financially viable. Secondly, a scheme which is just, even distributing services or redistributing services of low impact, a scheme legitimized within the society from a more, from a non-divided, from another op, from another, from another, from a, to change the way the society understands social policy. Social policy is understood in Greece as the allocation of privileges, not the enforcement of solidarity and of justice. I think that perhaps, if we invigorate, introduce a low cost, a low budget, a low profile, but just social policy scheme, this might reflect more communitarian instincts and produce more communitarian reactions to the society. I hope I didn't disappoint.
Thank you very much for the great presentation. I totally agree with what you said. Like a lot of these arguments have been used in my work as well. And my question to you, because I asked this question to myself many times, is who is going to do this in Greece? Some people, including myself, thought that maybe the external pressure, the IMF, the EU, may unblock some parts of the Greek society, which you said that it's a social problem. I agree with you. It seems that IMF and the EU intervention not only did not unblock the society, but actually it enhanced this division. So the people that were privileging the insiders, the people that were close to the political system in the wider public sector, the tax evaders, etc., are not affected as much as the people who were paying taxes, who were working in a low-cost or low-paid public sector job, or they were precarious from employment. So we have weak trade unions or trade unions who work as special interests. We have a weak civil society. We have a great division between insiders and outsiders. External help is not helping. Who is going to do this reform?
Kevin Federson, I hope.
Well,
this is a very good question in terms of, first of all, recognizing that the current situation rather divides than unites the Greek society at the moment. I totally agree to this, and I shouldn't elaborate more. Secondly, who? The second idea I have is after Kevin is that the Prime Minister Papadimos might make an attempt. And the third is that there is always a hope that after a so deep crisis, the reflections, the new powers will change the climate, will slowly reshape the patterns in terms of decision making, the patterns in terms of political cost, the patterns in terms of the prevailing cost of justice. I do not have, as I have tried to present, the immediate reaction should be another social policy scheme, a just one, a poor but just one. The second one, up to the second point, to reset patterns, it needs time. But what I'm talking about is to see the procedure, not that we have a social policy reflecting social patterns, but to introduce a social policy changing these patterns. The other way around. I hope it's clear what I'm saying. Okay, he doesn't want it. Lucas doesn't. I will do it. But if you are right that at the moment there is for most of us for the last two or three decades there is a huge disappointment from political decision making. But do you see any alternative? Not just to hope, but to propose solutions and perhaps by a more efficient administrative pattern, by a more decisive political personnel, we could be less hopeless.
I was interested in the contrast between the description you had of the social policy system in Greece before the crisis and the impact of the crisis on the social policy and social situation. Because the picture of social policy in Greece is one which is a contributory system, continental corporatist system in the terms of Espen Anderson and his analysis of welfare regimes. And you painted this picture of one which is the social welfare depends very much on contributions. It has lots of gaps in it, doesn't really reach the poor, it's very poor, badly targeted towards the poor, it's not very redistributive. And so then you go on, when you went on to talk about the crisis, you said that the crisis has mainly afflicted the more vulnerable people in society. But does that really fit with this picture of the welfare regime in Greece as being one which didn't really target the poor in the first place? So how could they really be very much hit by the crisis? And sort of feeling I get is really probably the crisis has been hit in the middle of that more than the
What I'm saying is that in a social policy system under a stable condition of crisis, we have another very difficult situation where now no money exists, no resources. The past system was distributing resources not according to need, not according to justice, but according to other criteria. First. Second, I hope that everybody in this room agrees that in such crises there are always the most vulnerable groups who pay more. This should happen even in this country or in Scandinavian countries. I suppose this is a norm. It is not a matter of a system, it's a matter of how things work. Thirdly, the contradiction really is that, of what I'm saying, is that the society would, the initial contradiction, I hope, the society is an individualistic, fragmented society, which now should support another social policy idea. That's the main problem. Me. But we shouldn't see things following only the Espen Anderson typologies, but also experiencing a difficult situation and hoping that the social reactions at the end of the day will be these who will generate radical change.
One issue as a follow-up on that, more recent, one point as a follow-up on the welfare state regimes, more recent classifications do classify Greece or Italy or Spain as southern regimes, that's not continental conservative welfare regimes. I think that fits better to your picture. But what I wanted to ask was about European and global dimension of social policy. You touched that a little bit. But what would the concept of your concept of social justice and policy in the European context imply for the debt issue? And here I mean consequences for debt restructuring, debt audit, business debt audit, and participation and voice, looking into that from new perspective, background of the debt, and its implications for managing social policy.
Think I have tried to emphasize was the administrative incapacity, which is a general feature in Greece, which also covers the social policy system, which means that even if we did have money, during my presentation that even high-budget social policies fail. They do not have the impact expected to have. To be honest, I cannot answer your question more than this, but my belief is that the problem in social policy in Greece is not an economic one. It is a problem of values, is a problem of efficiency, is a problem of administration. Which means that in my mind, the real problem, even today, is not the financial crisis, but the social pattern.
So does this mean that even there is a European solution for coming to the debt problem.
I'm asking for national.
First
of all, I'm asking for national alternatives. I mean, even if there is no money, we hope that the country still exists and there is no bankruptcy. Okay, but otherwise, the money for me is not the problem at the moment. Because even if we had money, we did not allocate them in a decent, in an acceptable, wider acceptable way. I mean, perhaps this is a bit strange for you, but the pattern is a problem. The ideals, the lack of ideals is a problem. The lack of acceptable social behavior in terms of a community environment, in terms of what I have stressed too much, I hope that we do not have, in Greece we just have rights, we do not have duties. We have this, the other, but we are not, I mean, this is a matter which I understand, you understand also that it needs time. But if this doesn't change, money will not solve the problem. We will come back to this situation sooner or later.
Thank you for a very interesting presentation. I guess the question for me is, to what extent can someone draw a line under the whole issue of group exception? And to what extent what you present is unique in Greece, and therefore something that need separate analysis. I mean, obviously we're an independent observatory, so it makes sense. But having lived in this country for the last 3 years and having experienced the way that Greece is portrayed in the press in this country, I've become very hesitant to accept statements of that kind, that Greeks have a moral problem, that the Greeks do not behave appropriately. You know, according to whom? Who sets the standards? And what is the model of appropriate behavior? Is it the deserted underclass in this country, the 15% for which no one cares about, then it caused the troubles during the summer? Is it, so I would be very interested to hear this on that.
I hope that it was clear that I didn't raise any moral issues. The issue, and about the Greek peculiarities, I cannot swear that this is a unique country, but there are many peculiarities which are reflected in the whole system. I'm not condemning Greeks, I'm one of them. I didn't, I'm talking about what is the way I see as a viable way out in a poor country where most of the poor people used to live as rich. In the beginning of my presentation, I have emphasized that according to my according to the way I see the situation and the prospects, even if the worst scenario, Greece at the end of the day will not avoid overall bankruptcy, in terms of social policy and in terms of social culture, such a structural change would make the country, the society, the economy, the political system richer, would develop. This would be a major, a big progress, a major development. I do not know if you propose that such an individualistic society is a very good thing. I believe that it is not, but I didn't know what is appropriate. I didn't use the word appropriate or inappropriate. For me, appropriate is that we should, when we live in a society, we have also to think about our neighbor. When we are alone, okay, fair enough. This is the way we think and behave in terms of social solidarity in Greece. For me, yes, it's unacceptable. For my ideology, for my priorities. But on the other hand, the outcome, the current situation, the current deadlock, underlines that we need such a structural change towards a more communitarian direction.
Questions from
Spiros. Thank you very much for your presentation. I want to ask you a question which is not too clear in my mind. A lot of what you have to say is aspiration, and it's felt from the heart, and it's put into the context of social policy, and it's about mood change. It's about behavioural change in some respects. It's about cultural change. But the one thing that's missing from this, and perhaps you can help answer this question in this discussion, is could you suggest to us one or two or three reforms that you think would start to address some of these basic issues that you've raised, both in your presentation and in the context of the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Because I share a lot of what you have to say in terms of we need some kind of change in behavior towards each other as citizens, or we need some kind of change in our behavior towards how we view the state, which we view as something apart from us. But could you actually explain to us how a prime minister or a social group or some other aspect of the society can promote and produce a 1, 2, 3 reforms that will actually address some of the questions that you raised?
Let's take another question.
I agree with your point, everyone's point, I guess, regarding the mentality and the dysfunction of this mentality. I guess this is what you're referring to rather than moral issues or anything like that. So I agree with that, but I'm wondering that for as long as this mentality worked, nobody had to say much about that. Now that it can't work anymore, now the problem is getting bigger and we need to. I was wondering about social policy. Would you agree in saying that social policy in Greece up until today used to be empirical, and maybe used to be empirical rather than analytical, and maybe it's time for a more analytic kind of social policy planning to take place rather than stick to all dysfunctional empirical practices?
Yes, I hope that I did answer this question in the beginning when I've said that social policy is not designed, which means planned, but decided according to several criteria, but not social criteria or not needs. This mentality, for me, this mentality never worked. But now we are, the situation has come to an end. I don't know if you were happy, of course you are much younger than I, if you were happy in Greece 10 or 15 years ago, many people were not. I mean, this mentality for some of us has been always a problem. Now, please think if the mentality was different, what this should meant in the current situation. Of course, there are signs that a kind of unorganized solidarity due to by the church, by the local authorities, by some sensitive, active citizen groups. There are signs that something is moving in terms of solidarity, but at least for me, this mentality has been always a major problem. And of course, I think everybody who has studied the Greek social policy system has more or less agreed that one of the main deficits of the system is planning. And this is not because planning is a difficult thing to do, it's because planning is not convenient for decisions taken based on political criteria. That's what I believe on this. About the other question. Okay, I have referred at least 2 or 3 times to what I think is the priority, should be the priority. The priority should be on education and health. On health for obvious reasons, LSE Health is on the next floor. And on education because we need to reinvigorate the way, the basis of our society in this particular moment, not by the family, but by more organized and reorganized systems which have an influence in society. Of course, I understand that you would say that we have to work too much on this ground, but this is a major reform in education. not education, educational reform in terms of who gets in the university, but what happens in the university or what happens in the schools. Second, as everybody I think agrees in this room, also civil society is weak. So we couldn't expect many from this side, but even so, honestly, I do not have to give the solution for a short-run change. For me, I'm studying social policy, I'm not a political scientist or an economist. For me, the main task for social policy is to teach by a decent scheme, by a just and justified and legitimized new social policy paradigm to show the Greek society what the benefits of a more coherent, a more just, a more solid society are.
No question, but I think there's a contradiction here in the sense of, you know, much of the change, the eventual change, is sort of focused on social change. But then, in the whole presentation, if I, you know, like the presentation is focused on social policy, so it's the state rather than the society that has to trigger the change of society, which is then going to be more egalitarian. And have notions of justice, and it is difficult to see how, or not difficult to see, but it doesn't follow automatically that a state that sort of constructs or engineers this kind of participatory society and instills this kind of more communitarian ideals is necessarily a state which is also at the same time efficient and distributive. Caters for, you know, provides welfare, caters for the poor or for different social groups. It could be a state which is authoritative, but they provide this kind of, you know, 5-year educational plan where everybody is sort of programmed to become a model citizen in 5 years' time, and then we have this sort of solidaristic society. Also, in terms of sort of other measures like, you know, providing a minimum income guarantee, perhaps, especially in the context of Greece, the best way to do that is to have a single flat tax rate. So you simplify, you oversimplify the tax system, give an amnesty on past tax evasion, and then you sort of, you stabilize your tax receipts. On the basis of that, you can provide a minimum income. But this is not a distributive, it's not just, you know, if you have a flat tax rate, it's not a distributive, you know, it's regressive, it is not just in the sense that everybody pays the same tax rate. So, but it does provide the welfare for people who are actually experiencing today sort of extreme poverty. So I don't necessarily see that in all examples you can think that all things can be delivered at the same time, a redistributive, welfare-minded state which also facilitates the activation of the society and so forth.
I understand that we have opened this afternoon many windows. And I can assure you that I can not close most of them. On the other hand, what you have mentioned about flat rates, tax rates, etc., it's your expertise, not mine. What I have tried to emphasize, what was my the main idea for this work, was besides the complete, the overwhelming, the astonishing lack, deficits of justice in every respect in social policy, my second guideline was to emphasize that social policy is also about non-material resources is also about non-material needs. I cannot answer all these kind of questions, but I can say that if these kind of things, such opportunities, meritocracy, dignity, respect, autonomy, should be not reinforced, enforced at the first place, which might happen in a way, up to an extent, by a social policy reform, this should replace, in a way, replace economic resources, and on the other hand, should offer or should attempt to offer the society another less individualistic, more communitarian vision. The reason I have, in the first part of my presentation, I have make an overview about the social justice discourse is that in a different way some of these issues has been answered before in other societies such as the UK one in terms of opening the discussion about issues in social justice in reference to recognition or respect or representation, which is for Greece a debate for after 100 years or 150.
I kind of, you said at one point that you thought the problem was primarily culture, value, and administration rather than financial. Okay. That was what you said at one point. And I kind of wonder whether the experience of Ireland would be a pointer here, because I think that in one way you're sort of, I think you're probably perhaps maybe the Irish case perhaps indicates that is that you don't need such huge change to actually get significant benefits. Like Ireland is obviously very different from Greece, but there are similarities, very patchy social welfare, clientism, very unequal economic system. There was tax evasion on a huge scale by the upper income groups, and also they now share fierce dislike of Germany kind of thing as well. So there are similarities. But
there is also great dissimilarity. As far as I know, you did open a discussion about social justice, I mean, in official terms, long ago.
But it was completely fictitious social justice in many, many respects.
Now, that's a huge difference.
I'm just wondering why the response in Ireland has been so different from that in Greece. I know that the placards on the Greek demonstrations saying at least we're not like the Irish, at least we sort of prove it. But one of the in Ireland, and I don't wholeheartedly endorse what the Irish government has done by any means, the previous Irish government, it's had about 10 budgets, you know, sort of. But in the early budgets, which set the tone for the debate, it was strongly redistributive. There wasn't huge structural change. What they did was they basically the taxation policy, and the Irish response has been more on taxation and less on service cutting than the UK response. Still very hefty service cuts and so on, but more on taxation. And they put the hit initially, not so much in later budgets, but in the initial budgets, on taxing the better off, closing down tax loopholes and so forth. And that's been driven by a loss of political moral legitimacy by the elites in Ireland, and so the crisis in itself, not wasting a good crisis, seems to have actually driven the change in values and culture of itself. So in a sense, I kind of wonder whether or not the crisis won't actually do that automatically, or provided, and the Prime Minister had no he lost credibility very, very quickly. It wasn't that it was charismatic political leadership. He made huge political mistakes and economic mistakes as well. So the crisis itself seemed to drive a loss of legitimacy by, for the elites, and that then pushed it in a more egalitarian, the responses in a more egalitarian direction. And I'm not certain, and I know that has not necessarily happened in Greece, and it's not clear why to me, but I think that maybe there are...
Thank you very much for your very interesting question. I know that at least at the political and social debate level, there has been opened a debate. Social justice is an issue of concern. On the other hand, we know that the reasons of the crisis are different. Thanks God, because if it was the same reason in Greece, I am going to be what should have happened. I mean, the banks. And thirdly, I think there are some other dissimilarities as well in terms of, say, poverty rates. In terms of production structures, in terms of reasons of unemployment, etc. Honestly, I cannot answer this question anymore. I mean, I cannot see the similarities to give an answer. But would you prefer, in your country, the same political apathy and the same social individualism as is our case? Would you think that, what would you think might be the outcome of such a difference now?
I'm afraid this is a rhetorical question.
I see you can nervous see that.
I think we have to stop here. We can continue the discussion after we officially stop the seminar if you want. But thanks everybody for coming. Thanks to Professor Vainieris for the very interesting presentation and for the discussion that followed. We have our next seminar on the 14th of February. Athanasia Galari will be presenting on social change in modern Greece. We'll be very, very glad to see you again in a couple of weeks' time.
I can see that time is coming up.
Social, an example. Recently came up. Obviously, bankers.